Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining. So I'm going to go ahead and get started with the ABCs of NSF I-Corps. And I called it the ABCs because it really is a high-level overview of the I-Corps program. I could go into a lot of depth. That would take days. But this is just, you know, less than a one-hour kind of what is I-Corps and an introduction to that this program. So legal disclaimer, you know that. The agenda will be, I'm going to introduce myself briefly. I'm going to ask all of you to introduce yourselves via the chat, just so I can get a sense of your background and how much you know about I-Corps at this point. We'll go through the overview of what the I-Corps program is. There are several different layers to it, so it kind of is confusing for anyone who's heard of I-Corps but doesn't know the details. So I'm going to go through the overview and a little bit of diving into the specific verticals. Then what we'll do is a little bit of the methodology. So I teach this program for the National Science Foundation as well as others. So we're going to do a little bit of a blip of what it is that we teach. So these are the actual slides that I use to teach the program, just to kind of give you a sense of what the I-Corps methodology is. Then I'll go through the application process for you or for anyone at your university who is interested in applying for the I-Corps Teams grant. So you're aware of how to promote this opportunity to your researchers, and then how you as an institution can join the National Innovation Network as a whole. And don't think of Q&A as just the end. If you have questions throughout, please do ask. I'm not very formal at all, so if you want to ask questions along the way, I certainly encourage that. If you want to hold your questions to the end, that's fine as well. So a little bit about my background. These are all the logos of the places I've worked at, you know, typical logo slide. But my background is, you can see that I'm the smaller person in that picture there. I was doing essentially tissue transplant. So there was a cadaver somewhere in that room that day, and I started out doing, you know, working in a clean room, doing biotech kind of not research, but the application of it. So, you know, I started in that sense, and I went all the way now through, you know, working at a research company trying to identify novel drug targets. I then went into clinical trials. And did business development for a clinical trials company. And since that position, I've gotten out of industry and into academia and stayed kind of there in the past 5 or 6 years, specifically trying to teach and encourage innovators within universities to translate their technology. So that's my background. I also, just for fun, like to travel. So that's me in Egypt a year and a half ago. So for those of you who are not in the U.S., certainly welcome the opportunity to work with you because I love going places. So let's go into the overview. While I'm doing this slide, if you can, just tell me a little bit about where you're located at, what university you're with in the chat box, and then if you are affiliated with an I-Corps program at all, either an I-Corps site or I-Corps node, or have been on the I-Corps team, please do let me know that in the chat box just so I get a sense of, you know, your background. So the overview of the I-Corps program, I-Corps, just to get started, it stands for the Innovation Corps. It was created by the federal government, so it's kind of like Peace Corps, Army Corps. They hate it when you say corps. So if you ever talk about I-Corps, don't say corps. It's a living, breathing program. They don't want it to be perceived as, you know, corps. So it's I-Corps. The point of this is to maximize the federal investment. So as we all know, the federal government, through its various agencies, gives large amounts of R&D grants, really just research grants. And, you know, a lot of that ends up sitting on the tech transfer office shelves and collecting dust and, you know, costing us money, right, to support that patent. What they wanted to do in 2011 was to kind of look at that portfolio of the basic research grants they've given out and say, can we potentially get any of this to come out to the market so it benefits society? It, you know, generates new companies, which will obviously then pay taxes, which will help fund that cycle. But they wanted to kind of see, can we shake off the dust on any of these research programs that research grants we've given out and see if they can be translated. So they went to Steve Blank, who is a serial entrepreneur teaching a course at Stanford, and they said, hey, you're doing this, you know, for your researchers at Stanford. Can we take your curriculum and have you teach this all around the country? And Steve said, well, I can't do all of that. So what we're going to do is we're going to train up a group of instructors that are also serial entrepreneurs, and we'll teach them all the methodology that I'm teaching at Stanford. So that's how I-Corps started in 2011. It has since been adopted by 8 different federal agencies. So just as the SBIR and FTTR program started with NSF, I-Corps did as well. And now, as of, I think it's been 2 or 3 years, Obama signed this kind of agreement saying that all of these federal, these 8 federal agencies listed here have to do some version of I-Corps. A lot of them provide their own grants, but then they, the team that they give that grant to still has to go through the NSF I-Corps program with the other NSF teams. So they didn't create their own program, but they have a funding mechanism, and then they use the same training program as NSF. NIH is a totally different beast. If you're interested in learning more about NIH, I can go into a bit more detail on that. But the short version of it is you go through I-Corps after you receive an SBIR phase one. And when I say go through I-Corps, what I mean is this training program. I'll talk about that in a little bit when we talk about the I-Corps teams program. So there's this National Innovation Network, or NIN, that is really all of the fabric of I-Corps in the country and kind of become global now as well. But when you think of National Innovation Network as just U.S., there are 3 levels to that. There's the I-Corps site, which is a single institution receives about a $300,000 grant. That grant lasts 3 years. As that institution, you're able to give your own researchers $1,000 to $3,000 grants, so they can evaluate the potential of their technology. That's what the University of Delaware is. There are 86 sites. I'll go into more detail on the sites program in a moment. But at a high level, the TEAMS program is the next kind of diving deep into that. It is a $50,000 grant to a team of researchers. So this is a one individual team, like a faculty member and his or her you know, team members. They get a $50,000 grant to go through the I-Corps TEAMS program, which is a 7-week intensive boot camp taught by serial entrepreneurs. The last and biggest hub of innovation in the National Innovation Network is the I-Corps node. There are only 8 of those in the country. They have about roughly $3 million. They do the I-Corps TEAMS training. So the hubs of the TEAMS training happens at the nodes. I know it's kind of confusing, so to kind of put it a little bit more simply, there's this map. It shows where the gold stars are the I-Corps sites around the country, and the blue ones are the I-Corps nodes. I-Corps teams come from all different institutions across the U.S. So this is the National Innovation Network in visual form. Essentially, the sites do these mini trainings. They feed the nodes, you know, and the nodes do the bigger, longer, more intensive training. That's the National Innovation Network. I'm going to dive a little bit deeper onto each of these 3 levels because it's important if you are interested in joining the National Innovation Network to know where you should think about coming in at. So the I-Corps Sites Program, as I mentioned, that's at $300,000 from the NSF for you as an institution to provide micro-grants to your researchers. Like I said, there are 86 across the country. University of Delaware is one of those. And at each of these sites, there are their own individual training program. They can do whatever they want. Some people have the I-Corps site program as a class. Some people have it as a co-curricular program. Some people offer like stipends for, you know, supporting postdocs. There are very different levels and types of training across the country, and that's okay. NSF is okay with that as long as you're following the central model of the Lean Launchpad methodology, which I'll talk about in a little bit. Each of these sites offers anywhere between $1,000 and $3,000 to their researchers. This is for the purpose of customer discovery. Obviously, you can't really build a good prototype or do any kind of applied research with up to $3,000. So it's really just getting out there and talking to customers and seeing, does anyone care about my problem? And then the bigger goal of this is to hopefully get those teams into the I-Corps Teams program, which offers a $50,000 grant. So if you have any questions about the sites program, the solicitation is there. But the TEAMS program, which is ideally the next step after your teams go through I-Corps sites at your institution, again, this is that $50,000 grant the NSF gives directly to the team, and then they have to go through a 7-week boot camp. It is a 6-month grant. They can do a 12-month no-cost extension, so it can be an 18-month grant. But they, the first part of that grant, they must go through this boot camp. It is with, depending on the size of the cohort, there are between 21 and 24 total teams in a boot camp training. They offer these programs every quarter, so it's very, I mean, there's constantly applications coming in. It's a rolling application. There's no deadline. There are usually 3 to 4 cohorts each quarter, so there's plenty of opportunities for your researchers to apply to I-Corps teams. we're on team, right now I'm teaching a cohort in D.C., and I think it goes up to something like 1,364. So we have over 1,300 teams that have gone through this iCORE Teams program since 2011. It is centralized on the iCORE or on the Lean Launchpad methodology. So iCORE is branded or trademarked by the NSF. Lean Launchpad is not. So if you want to teach Lean Launchpad, that's fine. You don't have to ask the NSF if you can. You can't use the vernacular iCORE without getting their permission first. So Lean Launchpad is this idea around business model discovery. And I'll dive into a little bit of that in the next section. But just understand this very early stage. You create some hypotheses around what you think the research or technology could be good for, who might be a beneficiary of that technology, aka the customer. And then you create these hypotheses and you test to see if those assumptions are correct or not. We do use a flipped classroom, so we don't really teach this program in, we don't teach the learnings, I should say, around your business in class. That learning comes from talking to your customers. So we do these classrooms that are virtual, and you can access the modules online free at Udacity. I think it's how to build a startup is the Udacity class. Again, it's completely free. You can go through and watch it. I usually refresh my memory on it, and I watch it at 1x or 1.5x speed or 2x just to kind of get through it really quickly. But it's a free course. It goes through all the components of this Lean Launchpad methodology. And then as part of the Teams program, each team has to do about 15 interviews per week, so a total of 100 interviews in the 7-week program. It's a lot of work. So just be aware, if you're promoting this to your researchers, make sure that they have the availability to do it. But don't tell them too much about the requirement, because no one's going to end up applying if they really know what they're getting into. So hopefully we can get them in. You know, they shouldn't be teaching a lot of courses or taking a lot of courses, but they should have a relatively free schedule. The solicitation for this program is linked there. And then finally, the iCORE node, which there's the fewest of these. There are only 8 in the country. So it is unlikely that you would become a node, but if you are interested in becoming one, I'd be happy to talk to you about that. I used to run the iCORE node in New York City, or manage, I should say. You know, there was a team of us that helped make that a possibility. But they are regional hubs of innovation. They do the team training, the iCORE Teams training for the NSF. So the NSF, you know, taps the shoulder of an iCORE node and says, hey, you're up for 2 courses this year, get ready. And so you have to, as a node, you have to find the adjunct instructors, you have to find the core instructors, you have to find the venue. There's a good amount of logistics associated with that. And then you have to actually teach the course to these 21 or 24 teams that have come from every institution across the U.S. So that's that level 2 training I just talked about there. You also have to do your own regional training program. So it's kind of like an iCORE site level course, something that helps to feed the iCORE Teams pipeline. And then the nodes are responsible also for doing blue sky R&D, which is essentially, hey, is this working? What is an entrepreneurial mindset? How do you track the impact that this program is having? Whatever they want to do. Each node has a different focus that they're concentrating their efforts on, but they have to report on some, you know, R&D there. So that's the node. If you are near a node, which you most likely are, unless you're in the, you know, middle of really nowhere, because there are nodes everywhere in the country to some degree, they are your central resource. So if you are interested in joining the National Innovation Network as an iCORE site or putting your teams into the iCORE Teams program, they're the ones really to lean on and ask, you know, requests of. They might be able to provide you mentors for your program. They can connect you to the sites that are in your regional area. When I was at the node in New York, I would introduce potential sites to current sites. And so if they wanted to write a proposal, I would ask the current sites, hey, are you willing to share your proposal? Maybe you want to scrub the budget or something. But can you talk to this potential new site that wants to apply? And that's kind of how we got so many sites in the Northeast, is, you know, just kind of creating that network. If you're interested in learning the methodology, they can also do train-the-trainer programs for you and or your colleagues at your institution. So you can either observe or become an instructor at a regional course with a node. That's a node. The solicitation is linked there. I think this is the one from last year, because I don't know if they do them every year anymore, the solicitations, I mean. So on a timeline, how does this all kind of fit together? I'm very visual, so I try to, you know, put this in a pathway format. So an inventor at your institution has an invention and a vision for that invention. Who do you think that might be helpful for? okay, so maybe they come into your iCore Sites program. They do 2 or 3 or 4 weeks of training. They talk to 20 or so individuals about their problems and, you know, do some customer discovery about would this technology benefit anyone. They have some interest in moving forward, so they apply to the National iCore Teams program. Hopefully they get in, right, and they get a $50,000 grant from the NSF. After the 7-week program, they can either say, okay, there's something here. We want to move into a startup and create the company and, you know, further commercialize it, or we want to license it to an existing company. We as the inventors don't really want to be the entrepreneurs, and that's okay, or there isn't enough of a market size to, you know, to warrant having an entire company, but it makes sense as a licensing deal. Whatever, that's fine. Go ahead, license it. You know, the tech transfer office will work with you. That's a good outcome. It's also good if they decide, hey, there's no market here. We don't want to be entrepreneurs. Nobody cares about this problem. We're making a no-go decision. But we now know the broader impact of our research. So we're going to go back and do our research a little bit differently so that it has some applied benefit down the road. And that's a great outcome as well. NSF is happy with all of these. You don't have to form a startup, and you shouldn't. Not everyone should form a startup at the end of the iCore Teams program. But if you do, you should then naturally go on to the SBIR STTR programs, which are the Small Business Innovation Research, Small Business Tech Transfer Research grants. They are a larger sum of money from 11 different federal agencies, and that is for technology and business development. So the amount of money that comes with each of these is, you know, as I said, we at University of Delaware give out up to $3,000 for our iCore site program to each of these researchers. Then at the iCore Teams program, they get $50,000. At SBIR STTR Phase 1, they can get, from NSF now, it's $225,000 for a Phase 1. And then for a Phase 2, it's about $1 million, depending on the agency. But that's kind of how it scales over time. The intensity level, the commitment level, and the funding scales as you go through this pathway. So what are the goals of the iCore program? You know, the first and foremost was to really increase the impact of NSF basic research investment. So they give tons of, you know, billions of dollars of research grants every year. And they wanted to see some of that turn into tax-paying companies. And so they're trying to increase the impact of their basic research grants. There's also this National Innovation Network of, you know, the people who are teaching this, the people who have gone through the program. You know, there's 13 or 100 or more teams. They're part of this network now, and they grow their network and their professional network. If they don't form the company, they have great industry contacts because of these 100 interviews they're required to do. The grad students end up finding great jobs. If they don't, you know, decide to start the company, they have these great networks, and they, you know, become these fantastic innovators within companies, and they become advocates for you and your institution over time. And lastly, it really helps the entrepreneurs transcend this ditch of death. So we've all heard of the valley of death, but there's a little ditch that happens right after right after the basic research grant, and before SBIR and STTR grants, there's this ditch of death, right? So hopefully if we can teach the researchers a little bit about the impact of their research before they go and start to build a prototype or a proof of concept, they know what to build and they know who would actually pay for that down the road. So their ditch of death is a little bit less intense, and therefore the valley of death is a little less intense as well. That's the presumption. You can ask the nodes with their Blue Sky R&D if it's working. But that's the goal. So the myth, I think as tech transfer professionals, a lot of us, I work with the Entrepreneurship Center, but I deal a lot with our tech transfer office. And the myth is that, you know, from the researcher point of view, okay, so I've created some great research. I've discovered something. I'm going to go talk to the tech transfer office about putting together a provisional patent. I've disclosed my invention. Maybe, you know, they feel like putting together the full patent application. So now I just need a bucket of money from an investor, and I'm going to be a rich, you know, inventor, because everyone, of course, would want my technology or my invention. Who wouldn't, right? So I just need money, and then my venture will grow exponentially. So, but we know that the reality is that there's this huge part of the pathway that the inventors don't realize takes a lot of effort and work, the valley of death, right? And so what that is filled with, in our, from our perspective, is a business model and team formation, as well as prototype or proof of concept development. And so in these phases, you need to worry about customer and market validation, building the minimal viable product and then the prototype, identifying mentors and advisors that understand the industry and the application of your product or technology, the space that you might need to use to build, you know, legal counsel, capital, all these things, right? So where I-Corp fits in is really the first two. So who are the customers, what's the market potential, and what should I build for them? I don't know if this is going to play, but there's this little intro to I-Corp video. It looks like it's probably not going to play, but I'm sure the slides will be sent around, and there's a video that it should be embedded. If not, you can go to YouTube and Google or search in the YouTube search bar, Introduction to I-Corp, and this video, I think it's 2 or 3 minutes, will pop up. It actually is from the perspective of a couple of teams who have gone through the I-Corp program, as well as the program officers. So if you're interested in kind of sharing with researchers at your institution, what is this I-Corp program, it's a nice little, you know, video they can watch for 3 minutes and get a good sense of what's involved. So switching gears a little bit, I'm going to go through the methodology. I'm going to kind of describe a little bit about what we teach in this program. Maybe before I do, does anyone have questions around the overview of the I-Corp program? Is any of this too confusing? Do you want me to review any of it? I understand it's a lot to process in a short amount of time. If you have questions, put it in the chat, and we'll see what we have. But anything on the overview of I-Corp from NSF's perspective or the federal government in general? I don't see any coming in yet, so we'll keep moving on. So the Lean Launchpad methodology, I'm just going to jump into it. So these are the slides that I use to teach our researchers in the I-Corp site program. So this is actually a screenshot of my business plan that I had to do in grad school. It was a hydrogel. Rutgers had intellectual property around this hydrogel that, you know, was so great, antiseptic, antibiotic, et cetera. We created this 52 or however long page business plan. We had our financial projections for 5 years. Of course, it looked like a hockey stick because we're going to be rich in 5 years. But what we now know is that this doesn't work. This is not entrepreneurship. Putting down your guesses in a static document that it took you weeks to put together, it is not going to survive any kind of interaction with customers. If you go out and talk to people about, you know, hydrogels, and if they would find that beneficial or not, you're going to find such different things than what you put in this 52-page static document. So why do most startups fail? It's because, number one, they build something that nobody wants. And so that's why I'm not opposed to business plans when and if a bank asks you for a business plan, because it's really the only time anymore that that happens. But, you know, for the most part, you shouldn't have to write down your business assumptions in a 50-something page plan or 30 or however many pages it is, because you don't know if anybody would want that. So the first thing you want to do is figure out what do people want and build that. So that's kind of the number one thing that we try to mitigate. And lack of focus is important as well here. So what is the right way to approach entrepreneurship? We try to advocate for this evidence-based entrepreneurship in the Lean Launchpad methodology. And what that means is that you don't treat startups as a smaller version of a large company. In fact, they're two different things. So we now know that a company is a business organization which sells a product or service in exchange for revenue and profit. Put more simply, they can execute unknown. They know who their customers are. They know how they're going to distribute the product. They know where the revenues are going to come from, et cetera. They just execute on that. They can innovate on it as well, but they just execute on the things they know. A startup is different. You don't just scale that down and do the same thing. It is a totally different beast. It is a temporary organization designed to search for a repeatable and scalable business model. So all of those parts are really important. I deal a lot with our deep tech entrepreneurs. So temporary means, you know, something different than the software team. Maybe a software team is 2 years. A deep tech company or team might be 5 or 6 years as a startup. But you shouldn't be a 10-year-old startup. I mean, you're doing something wrong if you're still starting up after 10 years. And you're searching for a repeatable and scalable business model. That means you're actively talking to customers and people who have problems in the industry, trying to figure out how you can possibly solve that problem. So a startup aims to become a company. And then again, I like pictures. So how does this look on a scale, like as if there were a time scale underneath this? The first step is customer discovery. And customer discovery simply means talking to humans, talking to people about their problems, talking to them about, you know, what needs they have. Are they looking for greater revenue? Are they looking for decreasing risk? Are they looking for faster, better, cheaper? You know, what is it that the problem that they need solved? Using customer discovery, but first create some hypotheses around what you think, you know, the problem you're going to solve is. Ask if that's you know, the problem that people need solved, and eventually you'll get to some validation. At that point, then, you know, you can iterate on that, go that, you know, that loop a little bit more. At some point, you're going to go into the execution, which is a company mode, right? Create customers, build company, all that. Not that easy, but in picture form, you know, it's so simply put here. The first step, though, is customer discovery, so talking to humans. And as I mentioned, the first step of that is turning hypotheses into facts. So what kind of hypotheses do you want to tell your innovators to create? Well, this is a business model canvas. For those of you who haven't seen this before, it's free online. You can go to Strategizer or just Google business model canvas, and you'll get image results for it. Each of these boxes is really important. There are 9 key boxes to your business model. It doesn't cover things like, you know, the market opportunity or competition or things that fall outside of your business model, but it does cover all the aspects of a business. And it starts with your value proposition. So what pain are you solving or what gain are you providing? And then importantly, for whom? Whose problem are you solving? Who are you providing any gains to, and why would they buy? Next, we cover customer relationships, so how you get, keep, and grow your customers. And then we cover how you're going to get the product to the customer with the distribution channel. And then the behind-the-scenes side of the business model canvas is the left-hand side. So do you need to partner with anyone? If so, what activities are they going to do, or what resources are they going to provide, or what activities are you going to do, and what resources do you need? And then revenue streams, so how will you capture this value that you're talking about that is core to your business? And then how much will it all cost to operate this business model? So these are the boxes of the business model canvas. In our I4 Sites program at UD, we only go through value propositions for customer segments because those are the two really most important boxes. You do need to understand all the rest, but if you don't get those right, there's no point in moving on past those. In the I-Corps Teams program, the national program, you cover all of these boxes. So it's really hard in 7 weeks, though, to understand your full business model. There's no way. I mean, we cover the boxes to teach the methodology so that these innovators can go back, you know, to their institutions and continue this process. But at least, you know, we try to teach them about what are these things you need to think about related to your business model. However, the first step is to fill these with guesses. A lot of times, especially engineers, scientists not so much, but the engineers have a hard time putting down guesses on this canvas because they want it to be right. And it doesn't have to be right. It's not going to be right. You just put down your first best guess, you figure out if that guess is wrong or right, and then you move on from there. So how do you figure out if your guesses are right or wrong? You do experiments, just as if you would if you were in a lab. But these experiments look a little bit differently because we're doing market evaluation. So the experiment really is talking to customers. So that means getting out of the building, not talking to others in your lab or other institutions, labs, but talking to people, preferably in industry, that have problems because they are the people that have more money than academia, right? So go out, talk to customers. That's the experimentation process. And as Steve Blank, who created, again, this methodology, he says that's the difference between a vision and a hallucination. We all want to talk about the startup vision that we have, but without the true validation from customers, it's just a hallucination until you figure that out. So talking to humans is the important part here. I mentioned that several times. There's a great resource called talkingtohumans.com. There's a free PDF that you can download and take a look at. It's really nice layout of how you create some questions, you know, some hypotheses, how you create a script to talk to people with, and so on. So I'm trying to give you guys free resources so you can get started doing this at your institution without having to join the National Innovation Network in some way. But just so you're aware of it. So Udacity is a good place to watch these Lean Off Cloud videos. Talking to Humans is a good resource for understanding how you do the customer interviews. So I've talked a lot about customers, people, problems. You know, researchers always try to ask, where does our technology come in? When can we talk about that? How do we know what we, you know, who cares about our technology? Well, customers don't care about your technology. They don't care about the how. They're really trying to solve a problem. And customer discovery is about identifying that problem and exploring how you can solve it. So those are just a couple of slides that I would share with the researchers that go through the Lean Launchpad programs, either at the I-Corps site level or the national I-Corps teams level. And that gives you a little bit of a sense of what we teach. Hopefully you agree with that. If not, I'm happy to, you know, debate with you about why we feel like this is the right approach to evidence-based entrepreneurship. So if you're interested in getting your researchers at your institution to join the National Innovation Network through the I-Corps Teams program, I'm going to go through the application process for that. This is specifically for iCord Teen, the national program that your researchers can go through. But as you're thinking of this, if you want to learn this methodology firsthand, I would recommend you join the team as the mentor for the team. And I'll talk a little bit about that here. So the first step is to form the team. The core part of the team is the entrepreneurial lead, or EL. That is usually a postdoc or graduate student, someone who might be able to be the CEO or CTO of the startup if it were to be formed. The principal investigator is the second member of the team. Usually that's a faculty member. If they have not gone through iCore site at the local or regional level, then they have to have some other form of NSF lineage, as in their own NSF research grant. And that grant has to have been awarded in the past 5 years, or has to be active, I should say, within the past 5 years. It can be awarded longer if it were a multi-year grant. So that's the PI. They have to have some lineage, you know, either through the iCore site program or their own NSF grant. Then the third and final member of the team is the industry mentor. Again, if you don't have a network of potential mentors at your institution, then ask the node that is closest to you if they have mentors they could recommend. This is a great way to start to create some links to industry if you want to get started on creating your own mentor network. It's not easy, but it's really fun to kind of create this network of serial innovators and entrepreneurs of their own right, and having them come in and mentor your team. A lot of them end up wanting to be the CEO of the company, which is great. I mean, if they want to do that, sure. You know, that makes it a little bit easier for sustainability from your perspective. I would also recommend, if you have not had any teams from your institution go through the iCore, I would recommend you or a representative from your entrepreneurship center or your tech transfer office go through the program with them as the mentor on the team so that you get that firsthand knowledge. The next step is to prepare an executive summary. This is simply a one-page document. You can read the entire 15 pages, the solicitation that tells you exactly what to put in here, or I have a template that I created. It's an editable PDF. So it answers or has the boxes with all the prompts that your researchers would need to complete. So it's pretty easy. I mean, they don't even have to read the solicitation. I mean, they should, but they could also just complete this PDF that I put together and submit that to the NSF. I'm happy to provide that, and I can send that around to the Autumn group, or if you want to email me directly, I can provide the email template that I use to announce this opportunity as well as explain it, and then the template that I attach to that. So the template asks for, or the executive summary asks you to complete who are the team members, like I just mentioned, those three individuals, what are a little bit about their backgrounds or bios, what's the technology and the lineage, what is the potential commercial impact. So if you can do a market analysis on this, you know, okay, the market is $1.3 billion, it's growing at a, you know, 13% compound annual growth rate. We're going to solve the problem around diagnostics and help, you know, whatever, the potential commercial impact. And then finally, the commercialization plan. So are you going to start a company? Are you going to seek SBIR funding? Are you going to seek, you know, a VC investment, you know, and so on. It's pretty basic, nothing too detailed. With that executive summary, you now submit it to this generic email address. It used to be you go directly to the program officer. Now they have this centralized email that you can submit the executive, or you should submit the executive summary to. If you have never submitted an executive summary to the NSF before, I would recommend talking to someone who is part of this review process, like a national instructor. I'm happy to do that, or again, lean on your node to review the executive summary before you submit it and prepare the team for the next step, which is the interview. So it's not the regular kind of proposal submission to Fastlane. You do not submit anything directly to Fastlane on day one. You submit that one-page executive summary. The program officer reaches out to you, and they say, okay, we're going to schedule a 15-minute phone call with the entire team. We're going to ask you a little bit about what's on that executive summary, but we're going to ask you some other questions. Nothing too detailed. It's only 15 minutes. We just want to get to know you and what your plans are. If you get past that round, they'll invite you to the final interview round, which is, again, 15 minutes with the entire team. It'll be the program officer again, but it'll also be the instructors at the nodes that are going to be teaching in the next quarter. They ask a lot more difficult questions, and so I would recommend kind of preparing for this interview process before you get into it. There are some common things that, you know, will trip teams up that I'm happy to help you with. I'm not going to tell you what to expect exactly in the interview because that would be cheating and not fair. But I can give you some, you know, here's what you should think about if you want to prepare for the interview process. And then finally, the NSF will let you know whether or not you're invited to submit a proposal. And it's essentially just a 5-page version of your executive summary. It doesn't have to be anything new or different. You just expand upon what you put in that one page. At that point, you're notified via email immediately, usually that same day that you have the final interview call. You're notified as a team about whether or not you're invited to submit the proposal, and if you are, that means you are accepted into the program. The submission is just, you know, administrative process, and they will let you know which cohort that you are going to be going to, so you can go ahead and start to schedule hotels and flights and all of that. The program, I should mention, that 7-week program, it's not all on-site at one of those 8 node locations. Only the first 3 days are on-site, and then you meet via WebEx once a week. And then at the end, the last 1.5 days now are back on-site at that location. But at that point, you will know where you're going and when. Somebody asked, can you have more than 3 team members? And yes, you can. Keep in mind, though, you have to pay for each team member. There is, with that $50,000 you get, you have to then turn back around and give it to the logistics company that works with the NSF. So each team member, it used to be $1,500 per team. I'm not sure if that's gone down or up because they're working with a different logistics partner now. But you have to pay $1,500 per team member. And then I would really recommend if a team member is not actively participating in customer discovery and meeting as a team, I wouldn't put them on the iCore team proposal just because that person is then on the hook to be a part of that team, active member of that team. So what we typically see is a co-EL, co-entrepreneurial lead, so another grad student in the lab or maybe a postdoc that also wants to work to commercialize. Sometimes there's co-PIs and sometimes there's co-mentors, but if there's too many chiefs, and not enough Indians, and it's a terrible, you know, analogy now. It's not PC, but you know what I'm trying to say. Then it can be a little bit difficult to manage the team because it's an intensive program. But, yes, you can have more than 3 team members. All right, so kind of finally, how do you join the National Innovation Network? I mentioned, you know, promoting this process or this program to your team so they can get $50,000 grants themselves. At UD, we've had probably close to a dozen teams at this point go through the iCore Teams program in the past 2 years. And so it's a great way to get that, you know, community built up at your institution, to get them aware and interested and an advocate for entrepreneurship and commercialization. But some other ways to join the Innovation Network are by becoming an iCore site. Again, this is an institution-wide proposal. So I would recommend talking to current iCore sites and your local node before you do this. It is... it's about a 15-page proposal you have to put together, but it is, I mean, you want to hit some major points like inclusive efforts, right? So how are you going to broaden the impact with, you know, women and historically underrepresented groups? How are you going to create a mentor network? Do you know anything about Lean Launchpad methodology? And you can say yes if you've gone through the iCore Teams program as a mentor, which is a nice way to kind of leverage that. There's a lot of planning that you want to put into this. It's not just, you know, we're going to theorize in 15 pages. You really should have done a lot of legwork before you even submit the proposal. But you could get up to $300,000 for 3 to 5 years if you do no-cost extensions. And this gives you an opportunity to get a lot of these mini-grants out to your team, which makes you very attractive to work with the researchers at your institution as well as the other colleges and departments, and if you're, you know, working with your entrepreneurship center, it makes you a really nice person to work with because you have the money, right? It also helps the tech transfer office understand what intellectual property is worth supporting, and I mean financially supporting. It, you know, really gives you a good sense of whether or not there's any market potential here. That's one way. The other way is to join a node, regional, or national teaching team. If you're going to become a site, I would recommend doing this first, right? So get on the teaching team somehow. Figure out this methodology, learn it, grow your network, become a part of the National Innovation Network before you even are formally a part of it. Be a mentor on an iCore team. Promote the team's grant to your researchers. If the NSF starts seeing, and thereby the instructors that teach for the NSF, if they start seeing a lot of applications coming in from, you know, your institution, they're going to know someone's promoting it. And so you'll kind of get some recognition that way. And I'll come back with other suggestions here in a moment. I'm curious to see how others might have gotten involved. So before I get to the very last slide, I want you to be aware that this community and the National Innovation Network is there to help, and specifically the nodes are really there to help the region. So look at that map again. Go to venturewell.com or .org, I think it is, and look up the map, because you can actually click through it and you'll get a better picture, because the end of that map that I showed was kind of small. But it'll show you where the nodes are, and then you should reach out to them and ask them how you can get involved. They can provide additional detail. They can come to your institution and do an info session. They can do introductions to the I-Corps program directors. They can help you review your executive summary, et cetera. You can read this list. So they're really there to help you, and you should leverage them. And finally, this is a nice slide you can share with others. Benefits of I-Corps, as I mentioned, it's kind of just a recap. It's an opportunity to make a societal and economic impact with your research project. It's a way to de-risk commercial potential for startup or licensing. You can get connections to mentors, instructors, and business training. You have funding from the, non-dilutive funding from the federal government to help identify what your intellectual property portfolio, which one should move forward or be left behind. It's a good way to attract motivated, innovative graduate students to the labs at your institution. And I shouldn't put this number in here because it changes, but your researchers are much more likely to win an FBI or SBTR grant if they go through I-Corps. And it's not because they have a stamp on their proposal that says, I went through I-Corps, give me the FBIR grant. It's really, they have a much better sense of the broader impact, as well as the letters of support are really strong because they've talked to 100 people in their industry. There's also the opportunity to kind of scale your funding through sites and teams and FBIR. That's it. That's the slides I have. We have about 15 minutes left for Q&A. That's my email address if you want me to send you anything that I mentioned or have any additional questions. I would recommend going to the I-Corps webpage here to learn anything additional about the I-Corps program. I think the video is on that page, but there's a lot of detail on this webpage. So, any questions?
Oh, we just had one come in, Christina. Can you talk a little bit about how critical the initial interview is, and can you add anything after the fact that might be needed for that?
Okay, yeah. So the initial interview it depends on how the team is coming in. If they came in to the initial interview because they had an NSF basic research grant and they did not go through an I-Corps site program or any other lean launchpad training, the bar is a little bit lower of what they expect the responses to be from the team. In 15 minutes, you have to win the NSF over as to why they should invest $50,000 into this team. So it is important. You want to think about what is the commercial potential. Is this team committed to the 7-week program? What is the potential impact of this technology? Is there a realistic plan to commercialize this? Do they just want to do licensing, or are they open to the idea of doing startup? Because NSF doesn't want to just support, vetting licensing deals. You have to at least be somewhat willing to, state that you're willing to start a company potentially, if that's the right way to move forward. It is really important, and I would recommend preparing as best you can before you get on that initial interview. They ask you the same standard questions. So, again, if you were a mentor on a team, you can go through this process with them. Here are the questions that are asked of the team. And then for the next team that you have go through, you can work with them and prepare them for the interview process. As far as anything after the fact that you need, not really. I mean, that executive summary, that one page, is the thing that triggers the interview process. And then you have 2 phone call interviews. And then if you're invited, you submit the 5-page proposal to Fastlane. And that's really it. There's nothing, you're not invited to have email exchanges with the program officers. They don't want you to do that. There's no additional documentation to provide. It's pretty basic.
Okay, thank you, Christina. We just got another question. What restrictions are there in the use of funds for the $50,000? Is there any restriction on what it can and cannot be used for?
Yes, there definitely are. First of all, at administrative level, the overhead is capped at 10% or $5,000. So as an institution, you're not going to get a ton of money back for these grants. I mean, they're small grants anyways. So that's the one big cap. And then for the most part, I mean, they ask you to put the rest of the $45,000 or more into the other category. So it doesn't have to be budgeted very specifically on the proposal. But there are restrictions in reality of what you can use the funding for. So as I mentioned, each team has to pay for their team members to be a part of this program. It's a $1,500 per team member. So, you know, if you have three team members, you do the math. Then you have to pay for each of your team members to fly to the location that the training is taking place, or drive or take the train or whatever, however you're going to get there, as well as the hotel and food and all of that. So you have to cover all the team members' costs associated with going to the training program. And then the majority of the rest of the money should be used for customer discovery. What that means is going to conferences, going to trade shows, flying to meet customers, hosting customers at your space if you have to buy them coffee or, you know, whatever. That's, you know, that money is to be used for the customer discovery purposes. When you're done with the 7-week training program, the grant isn't over, though. So you can continue to use it for those things I just mentioned, but you can also then begin to use it for a small amount of prototyping. So the NSF doesn't really encourage you to spend a lot of that $50,000 on prototyping, but you can use some of it for testing whether or not, really it's minimal viable product testing. So you've identified a problem, you need to test whether or not the solution that you think is going to meet that problem works. So you can use some of that $50,000 for the solution testing. Finally, you can take a stipend for the entrepreneurial lead. The PI and the mentor cannot take a salary off of this grant, but the student can take a small amount of stipend to cover his or her time. And I think that's capped. I want to say it's maybe $10,000, but I'm not exactly sure what that number is. You can ask the NSF that, but that's fine to look into.
Okay, and another question here. After the proposal is submitted, can changes be made in terms of how funds are spent?
Well, what's good about the proposal is that you put all of the money into, I think it's something like Category H, so it's unidentified or something. So it's all in one category, so you don't have to readjust the budget at all. You don't have to tell the NSF up front exactly what you're going to use every dollar for. It's not that kind of grant. I forget what it was, like Category H, I don't know, it's in the solicitation, but you don't have to worry about rebudgeting at all. You should have, you know, so that's the administrative side, but realistically, again, you want to think about how you want to use the money, and I would recommend if you're serious about applying for this, look up conferences that you might want to go to, and then you kind of budget in your own head or in your own accounting for those conferences. So how much does it cost to get there? How much does it cost to attend the conference? And so on. You know, so that's kind of the more realistic way of looking at how you're going to spend the money.
Okay, it doesn't look like we have any other questions coming in right now. Did you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share, Christina?
Yeah, so I think most of us are probably going to go to the Autumn Annual Conference in February. I would recommend if you want to dive a little bit deeper on this topic, there's going to be an entire day for the I-Corps course. It's the I-Corps, you know, a day-long course. I'm not running that or involved in it, so I'm not, you know, promoting selfishly anything else that I'm doing. But I would recommend, I know the people that are running it, and I would really recommend, you know, if you're serious about doing any of this, which I don't know why you wouldn't be. I mean, it's free money from the government to see whether or not your IP has any commercial potential. I would recommend going to that startup or to the I-Corps course, which I think is going to be the Sunday before the conference starts. Separately from that, I will be helping to organize a different course happening at the same time around startups, so just a startup course. Unfortunately, it'll be overlapping time-wise, so you pick one or the other. So if you have two people that are coming to the conference, you know, send one to the I-Corps course, send one to the startup course. We're going to be talking about things other than I-Corps, with just a small mention about, you know, why this is important. But I would recommend looking into that if you want to dive a little bit deeper into the I-Corps, you know, network. And then, like I said, here's my email address. Email me if you have any questions. I'm happy to provide you the emails that I send to kind of broadly announce this opportunity. And then I have another stock email that I use to describe in a lot more detail what this program is about for the iCORE Teams program specifically. And then, you know, obviously the web page is good to lean on. So if you guys have any questions, again, don't be shy. If you have any thoughts on what we should focus our startup course on for the autumn conference, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as well, so I can be sure we bring in relevant speakers and cover relevant topics. I don't want to, you know, I should be doing customer discovery as I teach it. So I'm kind of being lazy about that and asking you to contact me if you're interested. But that's, I think that's all I have. I'd say get involved if you can, because there's nothing to lose, really.
Okay. Again, on behalf of Autumn, I'd like to thank Christina for this informative discussion.